Blog Talk Radio. Welcome again to the Enchanted Kaleidoscope for our second episode of Forever. And today, our subject today is more in the lines of science fiction, hard science fiction, soft science fiction, in the middle. What does that all mean? So first I want to say thank you, Carl Kafer, for being the back end of this and being on the show. Say hi, Carl.
Hi, Carl. Hi, Vicki. Thanks for being here. Absolutely. Glad to have you.
Okay. Great. And I am, like, thrilled that we have a special guest in our studio today. My very, very, very favorite person taught me how to podcast and all the other things that came along with it. Stephen Ronquillo, the master producer of Steve's video show. Steve Ronquillo, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody, and calling Carl the back end of anything, I will concur.
Oh, my God.
Steven,
I love that.
Stephen and I go back a long way, and I also have to thank Stephen for so many things, for bringing me on as his co-host many years ago, and that's 10 years ago, by the way. But thank you, Stephen, for being on. Really appreciate you being here.
Right.
Okay.
And, okay, so, you guys, all along, when Stephen first invited me on to a show, we were talking horror. And one of my big things about – it wasn't horror? I thought we were talking horror.
No, the first show you were on was the most controversial films ever. Well, the most controversial films ever. And I've got that episode just now found and uploaded on,
Well, that's awesome. All I remember is that I was the opposite point of view of you guys, or no, of the mainstream idea of liking certain types of tropes. I just remember that. Yeah, and so in this show, because we come off a pretty successful Vicki Loves Sci-Fi on your network, Stephen, a lot of people to you put my name along with their science fiction. I have lots of people who text me now, what do you think about this science fiction? What do you think about that? And that's because of you, and I thank you for that. So my second show, I thought, why not dive into the science fiction? And Carl and I have had huge discussions over the years between what consists of hard science fiction, what consists of soft science fiction, can they blend, and which one do we like better and why? And so having you, Stephen, as actually the one who can bring them both together is a really good thing. So thanks. So what is hard science fiction? I mean, I have a definition for it, but why don't we start with you, Carl? What's your definition of hard science fiction?
Well, hard science fiction specifically focuses on the three sciences, the three hard sciences. And hold on,
three
let me get to this.
Three hard sciences. No, what do you
okay.
three
what,
hard sciences?
Well, okay,
there's only
so what
science,
I mean
okay?
what I mean by that. Okay, hold on just a second. Okay. So you take a look
what?
At The Martian, for example, and that's
no,
hard
let's
sci-fi.
Not. Let's not take any specific movies yet because
okay.
I want to know what your definition of hard sci-fi is.
Well, why are you getting combobulated? Let me say what I was going to say.
Yes,
let
go
me
ahead.
Tell you, yeah, why are you getting combobulated?
Okay, go for it.
What is hard and soft science fiction? That's the point of view of the viewers. Like there's some people that say, oh, we watch hard science fiction. Well, what's that? Oh, the original Star Trek.
Huh.
Or
no.
What's soft science fiction you? Oh, the original Star Trek. Like I said, it's like a painting in a museum. It's all the point of view of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, that's why I wanted your point of view, Carl, was to start this
yeah,
off
okay,
with what
so,
you thought.
I'm ready now. Okay, so you take
okay.
a look at mathematics.
Breathe.
You take a look at
and
physics.
Kill.
Okay. You take a look at mathematics. You take a look at physics. You take a look at chemistry. Those are the three hard sciences. Okay,
yeah,
when
but,
you talk about hard sciences,
hold on,
let me finish. When you talk about hard sciences, you're talking about something that is proven in fact and then extrapolated just a little bit to make it very, very close to what the science is at the time that the film was made.
Okay.
Okay. It always does reflect on the time.
Okay?
And that is what I consider hard science fiction, when it focuses on those three. And biology would be another one. When it focuses on the hard sciences as opposed to the social sciences, which I'll get into when I do soft science fiction. Okay?
I would not consider Pi a hard science fiction film, Carl. And that has to do extremely much with mathematics.
It does, but there's other reasons for that. And I'll get into that momentarily.
It's not, Carl. It's
okay.
gobbledygook.
No.
It's
religious. Yeah. And we'll get into that.
Wait. Go ahead. Hi. If we start arguing about the specific shows, films, novels right now, we're not going to get anywhere. What I really want to do is first set a foundation. You are kind of right, Carl, but I wanted to use you as the beginning because as far as you are concerned, you don't really get into the hard sciences and the hard science fiction. When you said the three sciences, mathematics, physics, and whatever else you said, they're all
chemistry.
They're all related to each other, so it's just one big science. It's not science, mathematics, science, physics, because physics is a mixture of chemistry and mathematics. Physics is formulas, mathematical formulas, and the physics of the elements put together. So these things all blend. So if you say that there are three types, it's really not true. And so when you're an author, when you're a creator, when you are trying to come up with a story, you're not thinking of these three elements. You're thinking of science. What kind of science can prove my story if you want to have something rooted in some kind of present day, and you were right about present day factual science. Doesn't have to be any category of three types. I don't know where you got that from. But and
well, I
biology
got that from an article, and actually it was four, so never mind.
Yeah, but who was the author of that article? And it was supposed to be your opinion.
I'll give that to you right now.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to be it's your opinion, not the author's opinion filtered through Carl's
brain. Right. I'm just saying that, remember, you asked me about hard science, which is not my strongest point. So I'm using
Don't
forgive, Vicky. I have that little term called science faction.
Explain it.
That's where I put the Martian as science faction because the author, the author of the book actually did his research on what it would take for that scenario to be plausible.
Right, right, which a lot of authors do these days for what they call hard science fiction. And that's the whole thing. When you find an idea that you really like, okay, let's just take Interstellar. Interstellar, the ideas behind black holes, the event horizon, what happens to things that get too close to a black hole, what happens after you reach the event horizon, go inside the black hole, all these things, these are great questions and great science fiction, a good sounding board, a good diving board to find a story. So you
one
can
of the
delve
neatest
into
little
it.
Moment in Interstellar is when he's going to the other planet. On the soundtrack, you hear like a little bing, and then as they keep getting deeper in the black hole, that little bing gets faster.
Yeah.
You know what that little bing represents?
Time.
A year on Earth.
Yeah, the time dilation of what's going on. And that's hard science. I mean, none of us, not even Stephen Hawking, who was the absolute expert in black holes, knew what happens after you reach the event horizon. I mean, sure, we get stretched and there's gravity and all that stuff, but he didn't know. And that's where the science fiction comes out of it. And the more accurate you are, like in Interstellar, Christopher Nolan was extremely fascinated with these ideas and traveling through space and what happens. If you just take a regular rocket and you go to Mars and then you come back, everyone on Earth has aged normally, and you have not. You are younger than you were. You're not younger than
what's that one with Jodie Foster where she goes to, like, the warm
contact.
Contact.
Yeah, that one does the opposite. Because when she's in the wormhole, time goes slower for her. And then, like, maybe the month that she's gone through the wormhole, in her perspective, is just a second on Earth.
Right.
Right.
Right. And so these are the great things when you start doing hard science. There's the show The Expanse. And The Expanse was created as a video game. And when all that money fell through, and we're going to get into the video games, science fiction, horror, and taking video games to film in a different episode. So I'm going to skip a lot here. But once they started into the writing of their books that propelled the production companies to make a TV series, the two authors of The Expanse went to the facts of what we know right now about our solar system. so that they could depict things like living on an asteroid. And here's where biology comes in. If you are born in low gravity and raised in low gravity, your bone density is thinner. You are longer. You have, your bones don't grow like they grow on Earth. So you're a human, but you're transformed by the asteroid you have been born on, or the moon you have been born on. And so this is good science fact that takes it into fictional stories. That's hard science. We all know it. From the space station, the science we have done up on the space station, we already know how it affects human bodies when you're up in space. Not just the radiation, but definitely the gravity too. So these things are extremely fascinating to those of us who like science and will bring us into these stories that have more science, present science fact into science. So,
and Vicki, in Carl's defense, he's more of a Dickian science fiction fan. And you will see people across the board fight if Philip K. Dick sci-fi is hard or soft sci-fi. Right, Carl?
Well, those that would consider Philip K. Dick hard sci-fi, I would argue with. He's definitely soft sci-fi. And I think...
Stop right there. Stop. Now, Carl, without going into any Philip K. Dick storylines, what is soft science fiction? Okay?
Soft
Before
science
we talk about the stories, we need that.
Okay. So, soft science fiction focuses on the soft sciences, politics, philosophy, religion, all these type of things that are studied but are not hard sciences. So when you get into a show that has aliens and it's all political, that's soft science. Okay, when you get into...
He's coming from now, Vicki.
Yeah.
Well, soft science fiction is stuff that's in the air, like philosophy. And hard science fiction is stuff that's tangible.
Good. That's really good. Because, George Orwell's 1984, almost all of us of a certain age had to read it in high school. And if you go hunt it down in the library, it is called science fiction. But really, is it hard or soft? It's really mostly soft science fiction. And there's one thing that you left out, emotions.
It's hard science fiction.
And I would have gotten to that too.
Because most of the stuff in 1984 has come to be real.
Yep. Yeah, it's not even science fiction anymore.
And all that.
Surveillance, mind control.
Real.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I would also say most of Philip K. Dick. I think we're living in the Philip K. Dick universe right now. I've said that hundreds of times.
You just like saying dick a lot, don't you, Carl?
Hey, I'm a dickhead, okay?
Okay, as far as soft science fiction goes, there's a lot more written in the soft science fiction genre than in the hard. I would also like to say that military science fiction really does have a lot of hard science in it that takes an idea of like nuclear power and makes it into a warp engine or so. These kinds of things are there's a huge amount of novels out there, serial novels of science fiction military war genre. And so
okay,
it belongs
using
in
using what
it.
Vicky just said, where would both of you put Heinlein Starship Troopers?
Oh, God. Fantasy, science fiction. I'd say soft science.
Carl?
I'd say it's a combination. I'd say it's
just
a combination.
Like every rule, there is always an exception.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Heinlein was mostly, his were mostly about, and his stories were mostly about relationships. And the other things like war comes into play in a relationship, or an alien
mm-hmm.
comes down and learns about human relationships. He was that psychological part of science fiction, which is the softer side.
Right, and he also was very political, too. Okay,
right.
And when
yeah,
you get into
right.
Starship Troopers,
the movie
when you get into
Starship
Troopers. Okay.
Well,
can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So when you get into Starship Troopers, you've got the technical military stuff in there, which I'm sure at the time he really worked on to make it as real as possible. But because of the political things and the way that he attached all that to that particular novel, it's what I would consider a mashup. I think it has both elements in it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I had
but
to say.
If you get into the movie of Starship Troopers, you get someone that grew up in a fascist society and seen how the fascists committed war in WW2 and slipped that in.
Yeah,
without the studio knowing about it.
Yeah, which is
but it's still
in the
original novel too.
Well, yeah, it's all through almost all of his novels.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Yeah, but you don't get Doogie Howser in an SS uniform.
Which is one reason why audience members, if you've never seen the movie Starship Troopers, you should hunt it down because it has got, you know what's really good is about the manipulation of the advertising, because the advertising in that movie is just dead on.
Oh, yeah.
It's so
agreed.
Good. And it was predicted through the novel, but, I mean, we live it every day. When I used to be in high schools all the time, listening to those kids talk about this shoe and that shoe and this jacket and that jacket, I'm just like, oh, my God, I live in Heinlein Starship Troopers world, because the manipulation is just so prevalent these days that you just can't tell what is real and what is bullshit. And I think that was
if
one
I
of
can interrupt
big
here
points.
For a moment.
Go ahead.
If I can interrupt, I just want to also add Philip K. Dick to that and the personalized ads that you see in Minority Report.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, Facebook. I want to shoot Facebook for that, seriously.
Well, I don't think it was Facebook that actually fine-tuned that. That was Google.
Okay, yeah. Okay, let's shoot Google then, please.
So but let's not shoot ourselves in the foot because we use those platforms. So, and this is not about going after the big guys anyway, but the themes of science fiction hit home more often than not because of these things like the political, the ads, the mind control, all these soft sciences that you and I and Stephen, we are constantly being bombarded with, but because we are of a certain age, we know how to push it away, whereas all these younger generations do not know how to push it away. It's been their normal forever, which was the point.
You give our generation too much credit, Vicky.
Well, our generation wanted to make money off of it, and that's why the world is ruined.
I'm talking about all this doublespeak, anti-news,
yeah,
viral news, that kind of song and dance.
Think about we're talking about Starship Troopers. Think about the of the movie. I mean the story. Okay, because once human beings actually get to where the aliens are, who have been bombarding us with big giant rocks and like asteroids crashing into the Earth, that's one part of science that doesn't hold up. The Earth would have been destroyed after like 5 or 6 of them, but the entire Earth. But anyway, that's where the hard science of the time doesn't hold up to today's science. Anyway, once you get out there, why are they throwing big giant space rocks at us? Because of our imperialism. And so in the bottom line of it all is, who is the bad guy?
Right.
Do you have to really
look? One of the last lines of the movie before the propaganda kicks in, Doogie Howell's character touches the brain bug, and he says, "They're afraid!" Then everybody starts cheering.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're not understanding, which is just like human beings, they're not understanding what he really means. And what he really means is that we made them afraid of us, that we went after their land, their territory, their planet. It's just like an Ender's Game, which is another soft science, science fiction.
It's a soft science film that turns into the first book turns into a nasty, serious, hard science fiction film, biting the ass at the end of the movie.
Right.
The book.
Right. 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 Because it's,
what do you
because
think of those types, Carl? Those that start out as soft, but then they bring in a hard science fiction, bite you in the ass to mess you up at the end of the movie.
To make
Just like anything else, I think a lot of this is what we like to call in the description of the episode, mashed. I think most authors, and particularly in literature, will use both ends of that and make something special, just like if you're a cook and you're using certain ingredients, right, and you're a chef. But a lot of that, and Ender's Game is a perfect example of where it talks about the politics, it talks about gaming, it talks about all these type of things, and then brings it into hard science. And that I do like. I do like the mixture of the two. Very much.
Yeah, in Ender's Game, they brought in something that the author.
Orson Scott Card.
Card, yeah.
Yeah.
My son hates him for his politics. But anyway, he's one of the first authors that brought in the idea of gaming and using gaming to train your soldiers. And that is a big thing these days in certain parts of our military, and I'm pretty sure certain parts of the Chinese and Russian military. And you get them hooked on gaming when they're young, and you bring them into the military, and they already have these eye-hand coordination skills. And so the science fiction becomes science as time goes on because these are so well based in fact.
Did you ever play Tank Attack back in the 80s in the arcade, Mickey?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. I played everything in
that
the arcade.
That game was created as a simulator to teach military how to drive a tank.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that. And some of those first video games that were like jet plane simulators, they took their designs from actual jet planes. And so the, there's blurring.
I could, all I could do in those games was crash.
I loved them. I
didn't
loved
even
them.
Try
they ate up Porter.
I'm pulling up, you son of a bitch. Move.
Well, you know, I'm just a really, really good shot. So I have really good eye-hand coordination, and so I can play those games really well. And so, anyway. So now that I think we have a really good foundation, and we've talked about a couple of movies that bring in both, of movies and novels, because I think it all starts with the novels. If you look at our great science fiction authors that came out of the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, they looked at everything from television to war to vehicles to use it in their science fiction to predict the world we live in today. And a lot of it was right on. I mean, here and there might be little pieces that weren't right, but the overall themes of many of these, especially like my favorite Ray Bradbury is Fahrenheit 451, which is all soft science. It's got very little to do with hard science, except it was predictive of the iPhone, the giant TVs, the suicide rate. The happy face, just keep smiling, everyone obsessed with white teeth. It has all this prediction in it from a kind of a science fiction dystopian premise.
The scariest thing that it gets right is the fact that we as a nation become addicted to our TV and don't read anymore.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's unfortunate, but the younger generation is addicted to TikTok, right? So TikTok is what's ruining everything. The attention span is gone. And instead of just being lazy in front of the TV, these kids can't even, or these human beings can't even be lazy in front of the TV because they can't even get that far. They just have this device in their hand that is no more than a foot away from their face, and they flash through it, flash, 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 every minute.
Well, Netflix, and I know you don't like them, they did a study on attention span, and they found out in their studies that if the viewer is not hooked within a movie within the first 45 to 50 seconds, they'll change it to something else.
That's
the bad thing about having too much choice.
That's their fault, though, because of that stupid idea of, and I want to do a show on this, all of this, but what it's got to do with is exactly the word you use, Stephen, choice. Netflix has, you know, they brought in little pieces of trailers for each one of their shows. And so you watch that one trailer, and instead of going, wow, I really find that interesting, and watching it like they want you to do, like they predict you should do, no, you got the next one and the next one and the next one, so you can go through all of them. You can like whatever you want, and then you can save it for later. So you have all that choice. You have hundreds of things to look at. You don't ever have to stop and watch something. And so that's where Netflix made their gigantic mistake, on top of so many other mistakes they've made recently, that they ruined their own audience in so many ways. Didn't we talk about that last week, Carl?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, because I had an article about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
to me, the gold standard in science fiction, and always will be, is Isaac Asimov.
And?
Arthur C. Clarke.
He is the hardest science fiction that you can get in a novel and everything.
Yeah, you're right there. He was always hunting for the true fact to write about.
I would also add to that list Arthur C. Clarke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although,
unless you read 2010, the book, but that book was just crap.
Yeah. Well, you know, he just had to do it for the, you know, he was contracted from 2001, 2010 to write those novels. So, but mentioning 2001 and how it is, it lasts, it holds up. The story still watch it all the time. People still love it, even though when you watch it and you see the, you know, the spaceships and the space station and everything, it's all, you know, so plain and it's not CGI, it's practical effects, and a lot of the younger generations don't like it. Still, once you start getting into the story, the real meat of what's going on, it's intriguing, and people still love it. And it's a good mixture of hard science for back then, you know, early 60s, science back then, to bridge the gap into science today.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing you just said there, and I'm not, I mean, I certainly respect 2001, not nearly my favorite film. But there's another film I do want to mention that comes from the same year. You know what this is, Stephen, because I've talked about this. It's Countdown. Countdown was done by Robert Altman. It was a B-movie, starred Robert Duvall and a number of people.
That's why no one
and
watched
basically,
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody watched it. I'm one of the few that know it. But it was actually, they worked with NASA, and it was a year before the moon landing, and they made it as real as possible. But what they focused on was not so much the moon landing or that, because, you know, it basically the Apollo space where we had problems and we had to bring them back. I forget what number that was, but
13.
It focused on the people that were doing it at the NASA, and they even had NASA didn't let them shoot, but gave them how things were set. And that's probably the most realistic science fiction film. No longer science fiction, because it was just a year before the moon landing. You know.
Oh,
and
I
want to
tell you something you didn't know, Carl. When they had the Apollo 13 incident,
yeah,
they used Countdown to get ideas on how the hell they're going to get these boys back once they got stuck up there.
Yep. Yeah,
well, that
I
makes total
that.
Sense.
I've forgotten about that, but you're absolutely right about that.
The reason why
that
makes
that movie,
complete sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do know.
If you
that
don't
movie.
Know that film, Vic, you need to see it. It's
I do.
Really good.
She does.
I know it. I watched it back in the day when it first came out. Now I forgot what I was going to say. Because science fiction authors are always thinking about, here's the difference between drama and the Oscars and science fiction and really great writing. Drama doesn't need anything more than two men who have been lifelong friends and one goes crazy and chops off his fingers. And there's your drama. And you win an Oscar.
Ed Sheeran, everyone.
But in science fiction, your author not only has to draw in its audience with drama, but it also has to draw in with science. or some kind of believable postulation, hypothesis, something that is going to keep you guessing and guessing throughout the entire film, novel, short story,
TV
series.
The problem with Countdown is that it was too realistic for its own good. So the normal audiences who are used to stuff like War of the Worlds and things like that were bored shitless with it.
Yeah. I was totally bored with it. I'm like, yeah, Give me something
I can think about.
In
a lot of ways better than 2001, but that's me.
I like Countdown a lot better than that so-called remake they did with Sandra Bullock.
Oh.
Yes, agreed.
Gravity?
Yeah,
I didn't like that movie too much. I still don't even know how she made it back down to Earth, sincerely. She make it back down. Anyway, a very good friend of mine worked on that, so I don't want to talk about it. And so, I want you guys to start talking about naming your favorite hard science fiction and your favorite soft science fiction. We have touched on authors. Like, I own the whole, almost, not the whole, almost all the Philip K. Dick, almost all Roger Zelazny, almost all of Ray Bradbury, almost all of Harlan Ellison. I own a lot of authors' works. I have lots of bookcases, okay? And I own a lot of new stuff, too. What I want to do is I want to give the audience ideas to explore these two subgenres and the mashable ones, and so they can leave the show and think, I might want to go watch Solaris, or I might want to go watch The Expanse or something like that. Okay, so Stephen, will you start with your favorite hard science fiction?
This is going to be controversial. Science fiction to me would be Fire in the Sky.
Yes. Why? Tell us.
Because it's so good and it's based on a true incident and it doesn't really try to explain what the heck is going on. It just shows you the facts of the incident. It's all about the...
And that is definitely a science fiction story. Although I remember the moment it came on the news, it was dark. It was it was something like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, driving my husband, my brand new husband, to work when I was going to go to school. And the news, it came on the news, and that was, it was news. It was real. The people, they were still looking for the lost hiker or lumber person, whatever they were doing, they were actually on a job, right? And
yeah.
So when it became a movie, it just endlessly fascinated me. Yes.
And it'll scare the crap out of you, too.
Fuck yeah. It's scary. Scary.
And for Saw.
Yeah.
Event Horizon. I just love that one to death.
I love Event Horizon. Yeah, there's really not a lot of, even though it has spaceships and spacesuits, and it does, you know, talk a little bit about biology, a little bit about, you know, gravity and all. It's really from the science point of view, where the where the spaceship is stuck around the planet. I mean, it's all just, yeah, it's not very science-y.
Well, it goes into Carl's version of that.
because it deals with the R world, R word, right, Carl?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
This is a
you know, but a vision of hell is not really religion either. There's more to it than that. But
a vision of hell, that ship in the uncut version, we're missing 20 minutes of plot.
Yeah, we are.
It does go to hell.
Yeah.
And most of the reasons that the ship has is their guilt. Real Dante-esque guilt.
Right. It's a psychological thriller, and it goes right to what they're feeling guilty about. And everyone who feels, and the innocent, the young crew member who's an innocent, he's the first one dragged in, and then he has the scar of where he's been on his forehead. I mean, he really had no guilt, but he was innocent, so he's the first victim.
And they say that when he goes out in the outer space and they drag him back in, that was scientifically accurate, like most people complained about.
Yes, and their space suits. And also, you know, when the crew member is blasted away on that piece of starship, of the spaceship, you know, he's attached to it and he's blasted away, but he's injured also, and he comes back. You know, that's all very possible, very, very possible. It's not like, oh, how did that happen? That's so stupid. It's because it's in the vacuum and not on, like, a planet. And so all of that was very possible also. So, yeah, I just love Event Horizon, except for it's just too loud. The music is way too loud. But and Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Beal, can it get better? Yeah, it's got Julie Richards in it. Yeah, it's got a lot of good actors. Excellent. Every actor is great. Good one, Stephen.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carl?
Well, as I said, hard science fiction is not exactly my go-to. But I'd have to say Countdown. Countdown, I think, is really, really good because it's very, very factual.
And
I like that
it's motherfucking
Yeah, and I also like that it really focuses on the people in control on Earth. One of the things I've not said, for me, and this is just for me, I like my science fiction based on either Earth or something I can really imagine Earth to be. You know, like the 2036 the setting of what is the name of that? The new TV series. I just forgot it.
What's
there. I had it on my...
What, Expanse?
The one that you wouldn't watch like three episodes. Peripheral.
Oh, Peripheral. Yeah,
right.
I watched three episodes. I haven't gone back to it yet.
Yeah, but that's very real how they extrapolate. And there's that sense of that too, and I do like that. But for me, but what I do like is something that you know, the science and reality mix and reality here on Earth. So I do like that sense. And I don't know if you would agree with that or not, but that's a personal preference for me.
It's all personal.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
It's all personal. But what film or TV show are you talking about? Peripheral?
Yeah.
Hard or soft or a mixture?
Well, it's a combination. But it's basically soft. It's basically soft because it deals with the personal people that are involved. It deals with politics. It deals with the soft sciences. Another thing, too, that an article that I read in preparation for this. You know, when they say, when we talk hard science, they take a look at how at 2001 and how is a machine and how is very, very realistic. But when you get into automatons, when you get into robots that walk and speak like human beings, they say that's soft science. Now, I disagree with that. I think these days we're almost there.
Anyway. You know why there's soft science, Carl?
Yeah.
They can't sing Daisy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. You know, so that was something I disagreed with that article. Because I think we're basically there now. You know, they got an animatronic head of Philip K. Dick. Okay, that's attached to a body now.
They have one of those for Lincoln at Disneyland.
There's something you haven't mentioned, Carl, that brings your point in more clarity.
Okay.
Japan has sex robots.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They absolutely do. It's a total reality. That's why men like robots so much and why they keep inventing better and better ones for sex.
Hey, listen.
Women are like tired of it.
If there's a new technology, porn is going to take it. Trust me.
Yeah.
No matter
I didn't
what
say
it
porn.
Is.
I said sex.
Yeah, sex
and porn
okay.
are different.
You forget the rule, Carl. Sure. Anytime they invent anything, in 30 seconds, a man's first reaction is, can I fuck it?
Exactly. Exactly. 95%. Yep. Okay. So I want to mention some films and a couple of TV series or whatever, streaming series. But for hard science, a man needs three. One is Gattaca, which is all about disabilities, perceived disabilities, biological and genetic manipulation, changing, and also genetic stealing, which is all becoming real.
That is the hell of a war.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that too.
And then there's also the film Moon that has this same theme in it because it has to do with cloning. And it goes back to the the Heinlein thing of advertising, what people want, what people will ignore to get what they want. And then my favorite, because I think it's really done well on a very low budget, not a budget like our film. My film was a zero budget. Done on a very minimal budget, and that's Europa Report, which is pretty close to the best hard science that I can find right now, even to 2023, because everything's slipping back into fantasy. And so I think those are very good. Her is another one. As far as the AIs go, they, you know, people have been predicting by 2025 AIs were going to become sentient. They started pushing that back. They're saying 2027 now. So it's not as easy as they thought, but I think those AIs are tricking people, and by 2025 it probably will happen. So those are good films. And I would like to also mention right now this television show that I've been watching, which is a mixture of both science fiction kind of facts and science fiction kind of soft facts or psychological warfare. And that is The War of the Worlds, the newest television series that's out there. I can't remember if it's AMC, but I just got it on my MGM Plus, and I've been watching it. I've only watched it through to the middle of the second season. And there's a third season that came out in 2022, I think 2023 also. And I know that this is still January 2023, but something I was watching yesterday had a February 1st, 2023 date for its second episode. So anyway, the War of the Worlds takes H.G. Wells' story and doesn't change it very much, but the aliens that come here, they have, instead of these big three-legged mechanical monster things, they reimagined it to those, you know, we've all seen it because Black Mirror did the scariest until this show, the scariest depiction of those mechanical dogs that the militaries have created, our military, to name one. Those mechanical dogs, the four-legged creatures that walk around and hunt you forever until they kill you. They are in this show, and it takes the tension to a
Thermal
new
puppies.
Level. Huh?
Thermal what? Puppies.
Yes. So we're getting into what you guys were talking about with the robots and everything. This show takes the very scary War of the Worlds. I want, you know, they're going to come here and they're going to kill us. And for their own reasons that we don't even know, we're trying to defend ourselves against something that we don't even know why they want to kill us. And then they send out their robot machines to kill us, which instead of the big laser beam things are now these mechanical robots that shoot these metal kind of like bullets at you and can just pierce your brain. And if they come up close to you because you're laying on the ground, they pierce your brain with a metal thing, and they, you have to see it. But anyway, it comes out of their little weird head, their robot head. And they are also, once the humans on Earth, find out what these robots are, they're half organic. They have their organic on the inside. And so that gives the humans, who are the scientists, an idea that they can kill them with a virus, just like the old story. So it's a blending of the two stories. I'm not going to tell you that this is super exciting every single episode. Some of them are kind of boring. It's not the greatest movie making ever, but there are some incredible vistas out in the middle of nowhere. The Alps are featured many times. They're beautiful. So it's got a mixture of all kinds of things. So it's kind of like what we were talking about, the mashup of the two, because the humans start forming little families outside of their family group to survive. And so it's got the psychology, it's got the emotional, and it's got the science fact in it all mixed. Pretty good. Pretty good. Kind of boring at times. Okay.
Carl didn't like her because it didn't have Bud Cord in it.
True. Electric Dreams, buddy. It was just a remake of Electric Dreams. That's all it was.
Okay, and soft science? There's a lot of soft science out there. They like to call Frankenstein science. Well, it is, because you're taking dead bodies, you're stitching them back together, you're taking electricity, you're reanimating, and the brain comes alive and the creature has a consciousness. So that's pretty much science fiction. That's not anything real, unless you want to call electricity real, which it is. So I guess, you know, but it is a lot of fiction, and it's a lot of biology put together. And
well,
so,
me and Sam Irvin's favorite version of Frankenstein, Frankenstein's the Real Story, is the only one that touches on the way that Mary Shelley described how the monster was born, which was in a chemical womb, no electricity. Right, Carl?
Yes.
But that's not the way it is in the book.
Yeah. It's grown in like a vat of chemicals, basically a chemical womb. That's how Mary Shelley wrote it.
Okay, yeah, you're right. He is. He isn't okay. of that. He isn't of chemicals to keep from the rot of the body. You're right. But he uses electricity. Victor uses electricity to animate the spark of life. I can see why in a film they wouldn't do the vat of chemicals, because the logistics of that is, I can just imagine, trying to do water. We just tried to do water on our film. Just water. You're thinking it's water. We should be able to do it. Oh, it's so hard. So I can see how why they changed it. I can see
Vicky,
that.
You should have watched the behind-the-scenes making of Waterworld.
Ah, it's one of the ones I've never watched. I bet that was hard. Hard.
Oh, God.
Hard.
In the middle of filming, a monsoon came up and destroyed every freaking set of the movie, and they built it a house on the ocean, and they had to stop filming and rebuild every set that had sunk under the water.
See, that's why it cost so much. Remember, it was the most expensive film ever made at the time?
Yeah.
That's why.
Yep.
Oh, my God. I never knew that. Yay, Steven. Okay. Also, I want to mention there's science fiction fantasy out there that, you know, we watch it all the time. All of us love Star Trek, Stargate, what are the other ones? Star Trek, Star Wars, yes. Even Planet of the Apes, okay? That is all soft science. There's not a thing in those that are based on any real science. It is total science fiction fantasy. I want to go into a spaceship, and I want to go at warp speed and travel and meet other creatures that this universe has developed. Well, that is a fantasy, and so it is not based.
In the eggs, they accidentally go into a black hole that, for some reason, is a two-way street.
Right, and bring them back to Earth, or a parallel Earth. You know, who knows?
Well, it's not a parallel Earth. They end up going into the future.
Right. Well, a black hole, that could not happen. But anyway, yeah, that's why it's science fantasy. My brain is, like, cracking apart right now. And also, the Terminator is in this scenario. But the one thing that the Terminator has that could put it into the hard science is the AI. I mean, we already have robots that war, okay? So the Terminator isn't quite the fantasy film that a lot of people want to put it into the soft science fiction. Terminator has the premise of the war machines. The even those, like, the one with Christian Bale in it, people hated that one. But the war machines, they're not so far-fetched in our present day. And the AI, Skynet, is only, what, 2 to 7 years away. So Terminator is soft science, but not really. It's edging its way over to hard science. What do you think?
Well,
what are
you remember the way they describe them in the first film, that T-800 is the first one to be able to sweat, to laugh, to urinate, to eat, to
right.
have real skin, you know.
And here's another thing. We've not even talked about the science fiction genre dystopia, because in dystopian science fiction, there's a lot of mixture. That's where you're going to get a mashup of your science fiction, hard science, and science fiction, soft science. And, it just went out. I was thinking about Maze Runner. No, I wasn't thinking about talking about it, but I thought I had something else in mind. And then Maze Runner jumped into my head, and now I can't think of it, what I was thinking about.
Well, Carl, what movie that you love is based in a dystopian, utopian society?
Oh, God.
Yeah,
There's
so many.
There's one that's specifically is in a dystopian, utopian society mixed together at the same time.
Well, I tell you one he's already mentioned is Gattaca.
The one I was thinking of is 1984 and a half.
Oh, Brazil.
Brazil. You live in a utopia, but if once you get below the crust of the utopia, it's a dystopian society.
Right.
Well, that goes all the way back to Metropolis. You know, I mean, that's, the underground people who are the workers, you know, that was
right.
Very, very much satire. And working conditions in Germany at the time. You know, I mean, there's so much of that. One thing I do want to mention very quickly, because we are over time at this point, and we've got to think about
we have 10 minutes. It's my show. We have 10 minutes.
Yeah, we've got actually 20 minutes. So one thing I do want to just mention, you know, you asked us about our favorite hard science fiction, but you haven't asked us about our favorite soft science fiction, and I was wondering if you were going to get there.
Yeah, we said the both of them. Yeah.
We both said it, Carl. You just skipped it.
Okay,
you weren't paying attention.
It just flew over your head.
Yeah, you
smoking. Okay,
just
so if I can, I would like to mention my favorite soft science fiction.
Okay, what?
And my favorite soft science fiction is also my favorite science fiction film of all time, also one of my favorite science fiction novels, and that is Solaris.
Right.
And I'm talking about the original, the 1972, though the remake is actually very good, too. And that is a film that and a book that really hit me hard. And though it's set on a space station where many of the people have gone mad. Why have they gone mad? Because they've been visited by their what they call the visitors. And that is someone that they have wronged over the years. And so it's one of those things where it's really talking about regret. It's talking about, do we want to go back in time and make things better? You know, how do we deal with this? How, you know, and all of this, even though set on a space station, is very, very much philosophical. And I love that version. And actually, again, the Soderbergh version is also very good. It boils it down a little further and is not as dense as the Russian version. But both of them are very, very good, and that is by far my favorite soft science, by far.
Being a student of world literature, nothing is as dense as Russian literature, so it would stand to reason their films would be the same.
Stanisław Lem was Polish, but yeah.
Yeah, but you said Russian.
Yeah.
Okay.
The film is Russian.
You said Russian.
Yeah.
So let's just go there. All right.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say Carl is as dense as Russian sci-fi.
Sometimes.
We're not dense at all, right?
And another big giant franchise out there that everyone, science fiction, which, you know, it is science fiction because it's futuristic. But it's really mostly science fantasy, is Dune. All the stories of Dune, just because they have spaceships doesn't mean that it's hard science. We don't have spaceships. If you remember correctly, we have rocket ships, And our space shuttle has been grounded for more years now than I care to remember. I've seen my favorite space shuttle in a museum. So when you are looking at Dune, which I'm not saying is anything other than the science fiction genre, don't start calling it hard fiction because there's no science backed in it. Okay,
it's Carl's idea of soft science fiction because Dune is a political beast.
Yes.
Yeah,
totally
exactly.
Political.
That is so soft science fiction, it's not even funny.
Right, right. And so when you're watching The Expanse, Expanse is so political. I mean, bottom line, political. But the science, the human science within The Expanse, and there's five seasons of it on Amazon Prime, you can watch, from anywhere from how the spaceships are propelled, how they shoot, how they target, the length of time it takes to get from one planet to another planet, all these different things, the biology of the humans being born in space, like I mentioned before, The Expanse is way more science fact than Dune. So when you're out there looking for something science fiction to watch, remember these distinctions. And I think it will bring a much greater understanding. People are always like, oh, it's science fiction. I don't get that stuff. Well, you should because it's all about humans and human emotions.
Well, I want to say one thing about a real science fiction film that deals with a group of trekkers in outer space. And for the first quarter of it, they're complaining about their shares. They're complaining
right.
about how boring it is, how they have to
right.
go into cyber sleep because it takes so long to go from one planet to another.
Right, right.
And what film am I talking about, Vicki?
Alien, of course.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
you're talking about Dark Star. Dark Star.
Benson, Arizona. You're
yes,
okay.
Well, I think that that's a very real premise, because we've been talking about mining the asteroids and the moon for decades, okay? And going out, and who's going to go out there? You think explorers are going out there to mine? No. People who want money are going to go out there, and the corporations that want to make money and the people that have families or want big bank accounts, they're the ones who are going to go out there. So all of that is so freaking real.
And don't forget, something in Dark Star has become science fact since COVID.
Yep.
What? Say it.
You know what that is? The horror of losing every ounce of toilet paper that you have.
You know, that's funny because last night's episode on HBO's Last of Us, where Ellie, the girl, is told to go through this house and get all the supplies she can, and the very first thing the camera sets on is her grabbing a bunch of toilet paper. Because earlier in one of the other episodes, she said she had to use the bathroom, and another character throws a magazine at her and goes, go for it.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that's what I mean. Science fiction has got those human elements in it. When you watch a Western, those fuckers, I don't mean fuckers, those guys and those cowboys and cowgirls, they're out there in the plains, and they just keep going and going, and they eat beans every night, but you never see them go to the bathroom. Never once did they have to take a
pee break. Watch The Great Silence, if you believe, if you want to see a Western that's too real for its own good, right, Carl?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, good God.
What's it called?
Destroyed me.
The Great
Silence.
Silence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't watched it, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Well, I think this was a very successful episode. I like the chit-chat back and forth. I like the discussion. I hope that anyone listening now or in the future can get some worth out of what we have talked about, hard science, soft science. If you even like science fiction a little bit, go out there and hunt it down, because this is real. HBO, Showtime, the big companies out there, Netflix, are culling their science fiction, meaning they're cutting back on it. It's hard to find. If you love science fiction, go out and buy a science fiction book. You're going to really, really enjoy the experience of reading science fiction in a book.
I want to say this. Screw HBO Max for not only cutting their sci-fi shows, but as soon as they cut it, take it off of their catalog so you can't even watch the back episodes if someone says, well, you should have watched so-and-so. Oh, I'll go back on and check it. Nope, not on HBO.
No. I expect to see how much it costs to buy the DVDs or Blu-rays. They're Blu-rays of Raised by Wolves. They want $75 a season, two seasons. $75.
Yeah, the collectors make it right now, which means those of us who remember the good old days of cheap bastard sales are screwed.
Yep.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing what I can to fill my shelves right now, because hard media is where it's at, and the streaming companies are going to make it harder and harder for you to pay for what you want. They want to show you what they want to show you, and it's crap. It's crap. So anyway, that's another episode. I want to thank my very, very special guest, Stephen Ronquillo, for being here with us. And making this a special show. Yay! And
yay!
I want to thank Carl for doing everything he's done to bring this show out there for all of you. And is there anything else you'd like to say, Stephen?
Yeah. You get my last name right better than Carl does.
Well, I live in California. I'm in California. I've had practice.
Yeah, and Wednesday over on KSDAD Radio, it's going to be Kung Fu Radio Theater Episode 3. And we're going to be doing something special the next 2 weeks. We're going to be doing the most artiest of, well, the artiest of the wacky Kung Fu films.
Oh, that sounds
this
fun.
This is one that goes wacky, but it doesn't go executioner too wacky.
Thank God for that.
And that is Jimmy Wang Yu's The One-Armed Boxer, and its sequel, The One-Armed Boxer versus a Flying Guillotine, or as we know it in America, Carl.
Master of the Flying Guillotine.
The Flying Guillotine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually,
okay,
wait.
And Carl, you want to do housekeeping?
Okay, well, hold on.
You know,
hold on,
stop
Nick.
Jumping
the nice
all
thing
over
about
me.
What?
I'm not going to do these anymore.
Okay, hold on. I'm not done yet with
See,
what
told
Stephen
me
was
to
saying.
Hold on.
All I wanted to say was that we were going to have also over at KSDA as a special guest. Rachel, who's my co-host, and it's because of her we're doing those two films. So there you go. That's all I want to say.
Well, you want to do housekeeping, or
yes, I would like to do housekeeping actually.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Okay. So over here on DLN, we've got a couple things happening. Tomorrow, Rachel and I are going to be doing one of our winter commentary watches, and we're going to be doing the horror comedy Dead Snow, which includes zombie Nazis, okay? So that's a lot of fun. That's also by the director of the current film Violent Night. And it's a good little horror comedy. It's a lot of fun. And then on Wednesday, very, very happy to have with us film director, author, historian, and also commentator on DVDs, Daniel Kramer. And Daniel Kramer and I will be doing a having a chat about director Ted Kotcheff. And if you do not know the name, he had one of the great runs in the 70s with Wake and Fright. He did North Dallas 40. He did the first Rambo film, First Blood. Who's Killing Great Chefs in Europe? Fun with Dick and Jane. Number of great films during the 70s and onwards into the 80s. And we'll be talking about that. Daniel had a video. He had a video thing about Ted Kotcheff that he is going to put on a DVD, and he did that's how we all got this together. So there we go. That's what we have coming up so far. Yes,
Carl.
Steven.
Do
yes,
not
Steven.
Ever mention the word "Who is Killing the Great Chefs of Europe" in great movies.
Well, you know, it was very, very successful. That's all I'm saying.
So
not
was
one of
Avatar,
my favorites of Ted's
it's
either.
Crap.
That's true.
Okay.
Okay.
So there
all
you
right.
go.
All right, so.
Thank you for having me, Miss Vicky.
Mwah. You're welcome. You're welcome, Stephen. I always want you on my show. And I want to do a Vicky Loves Sci-Fi whenever you ask me again, okay?
Okay, I will.
And so, okay, so are we done? We're done. We're out of time?
Absolutely.
And so, all right, well, thanks for listening. I hope you can file through and find something of worth in our second episode here at the Enchanted Kaleidoscope. And I would like to leave you with these last words. Doctor Who is science fiction fantasy. I love it so much. Sometimes some facts trickle in, but not much. It's just, I love Doctor Who. And HBO has not taken Doctor Who off yet, but it will soon happen since Disney and Russell T. Davies have made an agreement. So just biding time. So anyway, Doctor Who, the great 12th Doctor, said as he was leaving to regenerate into a different doctor, his famous words, "Never be cruel, never be cowardly. Hate is always foolish. Love is always wise. Always be nice and never, never fail to be kind." So please do something kind today for someone, an animal, a human. It doesn't matter. Just be kind. Thank you for listening, and third episode in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. Cue that music.
Absolutely. Thank you, Vicky. Thank you, Stephen.